Good morning. May it please the court. Douglas Grimes, and I represent the appellant in this case. This is a case that arose out of a RIF by Alverno, and the RIF was determined, that is, the employees who would be terminated was determined by a skill assessment study. As a result of the skill assessment study, Adams was terminated. Adams was a black female. She received a score of 11.5. Stablin was a white female. She received a score of 11.5. Adams had greater seniority than Stablin. Neither Adams nor Stablin was retained on the basis of their skill assessment score. Both were classified as laboratory support service technicians. Adams' husband at the time of the RIF and her termination had been diagnosed with end-stage renal failure. Before the RIF, Stablin's husband was killed in a motorcycle accident. Within several months after Adams was terminated, her husband died of kidney failure. The RIF criteria provided that the length of service would be used as the basis for the reduction decisions only in cases where performance factors were judged to be equal for affected employees. In this particular case, Stablin was retained. Adams was terminated. The non-discriminatory reason given by Alverno for retaining Stablin was because her husband had been killed in a motorcycle accident. And by they terminated Adams, even though her husband had end-stage renal failure at the time of the termination and had a history that the Alverno was aware of his kidney problems. Our position is that the non-discriminatory reason does not fall within any of the characteristics of the ADA or Title VII. Our position is that in a situation such as this, it was not a determination as to the intent to discriminate should not have been determined on summary judgment. We believe that this is clearly a situation where a fact finder that can observe the credibility of the witnesses should have had an opportunity to decide this question. As we look at the characteristics of the ADEA and Title VII, and as the court is aware, the trial court found that Adams had made out a prima facie case under both statutes. The question comes into play as to pretext. And of course, as this court is well aware, one of the requirements to prove pretext is that the employer lied. Well, we think that's an unreasonable standard. If we just look at some of the high-profile cases we have in our society, and of course, we can look at the criminal side also, who determines whether someone lies? You don't determine that by reading a piece of paper. It's a credibility question. So I think it is an unreasonable standard to place on a plaintiff in a Title VII case or an ADEA case to prove on paper that the employer lied. Judge Sykes, at one level I do agree with you on that. But I think if we look at it closer, you say, well, there has to be some evidence of lying. Well, what is the evidence? The evidence is interrogatory answers, deposition testimony, and other documents where someone And today, employers have graduated. They understand what they have to do to protect themselves. So what is the likelihood of the Cole record being able to demonstrate sufficient evidence that someone lied? I think that's a serious issue that can't be resolved on summary judgment. That is why this court has said that in employment matters, while summary judgment is proper, we have to be careful because credibility issues work their way into the equation. And if that's so, then I think that this is a case where it was for the jury to determine whether Alverno's reason for retaining Stablin, because her husband died, and firing Adams, who had greater seniority, had the same score, but they fired Adams, and her husband was an end-stage renal failure. Well, death and living, yes. Yes. One had died, one was dying. Yes. But the question is, death is not a characteristic of the ADA or Title VII. One is age-based, which the court found that there was a prima facie case established. With regard to Title VII, it goes to retaliation, ADEA, race, sex, ethnicity. The fact that Ms. Stablin's husband died, and no one is bemoaning the fact that that's not important, but the fact that he died does not change the law or change the form of the law. That's not a problem. One, on the Title VII side, because of race. What you did, what happened was, one employee you kept who hadn't scored any higher than the other one, neither of which would have been retained, the one that was terminated had greater seniority, and under their own RIF criteria, if the score was equal, they would go to length of service. I'm sorry, Judge. Yes, but those...
What they should have done was disqualify both your client and the one that they saved his husband who was killed and point the other.
Both of those two with the 12.5 were both fired. They were both fired. So the court's reference to the fact... I'm sorry.
It wouldn't have helped your client a bit in getting a job if they fired the one who had a higher score anyway.
Well, I don't think that's the issue, Judge, with all due respect. I think that...
I mean, it wouldn't be an issue if the only thing you get out of this is to have somebody else hired in place of your client. You wouldn't be here.
Well...
whether or not their argument, whether it was good or bad, was true. Was it an accurate appraisal? They could be goofy, but, I mean, they did it on the basis they thought she was more deserving of compassion than the other. That's just a judgment call.
Well, but, Judge... compassion doesn't figure into the ADEA or Title VII.
No, it does not. You're absolutely correct. But it does figure into the decision-making process of the fellow hires. If he has compassion as opposed to having a discriminatory intent, then he's home free.
Well, our position is that it was discriminatory intent. Yes. And I think that the evidence shows that. And then with regard to the common act of presumption under the Seventh Amendment, in a discrimination case, this court, not this court, the lower court, used the common act of presumption to supply an ultimate fact of non-discrimination. And that was to the prejudice of the plaintiff in this particular case. And we don't believe that the common act of presumption should be used in a discrimination case, given our history in this culture, where race does make a difference. And it's unfair for a trial court to use the common act of presumption to determine and to tip the balance of non-discrimination.
Good day, Your Honors. My name is Jim Mazur, and I'm here on behalf of Alverno Clinical Labs. Alverno Clinical Labs is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Sisters of St. Francis Health Services, Inc., which in turn is run by an order of Franciscan nuns out of Mishawaka, Indiana. In this case, I think the fundamental problem with the plaintiff and appellant's position is what he said stands as the rule of law in this court is unreasonable. That is, he doesn't feel he and his client are required to prove that the defendant appellee lied in expressing its rationale as to carrying out the RIF that they did and the rationale for retaining Ms. Sabline as opposed to Ms. Adams. The election that he has made and that the plaintiff appellant has made is to focus on the provision of special dispensation in Ms. Sabline. And as he forthrightly acknowledges, that's a non-discriminatory rationale. I believe that disposes of the case entirely. In addition, the lower court did give voice to what has been referred to as a common actor presumption. And to be sure, when looking at the common actor presumption, it arises in the pretext phase of the shifting burden analysis. And one, as I believe my opponent is attempting to do here, perhaps raise a question as to the efficacy of that particular rule in the context that we have in most discrimination cases, because still the rationale offered by the employer has to be shown to have been a lie, whether or not there is a common actor presumption or not. Here, however, I think that the factors at play in this case mitigate in favor of giving the common actor presumption particular emphasis and perhaps renewed vigor that it doesn't yet have, although the lower court did not do this. But in this case, there is no tangible loss by the plaintiff appellant. The non-protected classifications in the course of this RIF were more disproportionately impacted than the protected classification, and the plaintiff appellant had the opportunity to resume her employment at the invitation of the employer within a couple of weeks. And at that stage, mere acceptance of that offer of reemployment would have eliminated all adverse repercussions that she possibly could have sustained. Well, Alverno Clinical Labs, Your Honor, is an organization that does testing of blood samples for a wide variety of hospitals. They have individuals actually in place in some of the hospitals. The plaintiff appellant was working in a core lab, and there was no medical evidence adduced below that her working in a core lab doing these kinds of functions where she may have exposure to the common viruses of daily existence was any more detrimental to her and perhaps her husband than would be working in the jobs that Alverno wanted to place her into subsequent to the termination. That is a courier job and I believe a phlebotomist job as well. So there's no evidence really to support that contention, however fearful she may have been of that. Regardless, the cause of action or the common actor presumption in this case, I believe, should eliminate any and all potential liability of an employer in these kinds of circumstances where there is no tangible loss whatsoever. Indeed, that raises the question of whether there's a justiciable controversy at all when one sustains no loss. I believe my opponent has also suggested that there are Seventh Amendment implications to what was done here. And, of course, that argument was raised for the first time, as was his direct case analysis. And we believe that's improper under this court's prior rulings in Grayson and Allen, as well as, and when one turns to the Kopke case, the Seventh Amendment analysis simply falls on its face. I don't believe it has any merit because the facts were uncontested below. The material facts were uncontested below. There was also some deviation from the rules, as the lower court pointed out, on the part of my colleague. I'm not one here to stand on form over substance. I believe substantively this case should be resolved in favor of appellee. Thank you.
Okay. 30 seconds. Over. Thank you. Judge Sykes, we agree that there has to be evidence in the record from which a jury can infer that the reason given was pretext for discrimination. There's no argument on that. We believe that we supplied that information and that evidence in the record. The common actor presumption, we still believe, is very destructive of confidence in a case such as this, because even though the district court said it would have made the same decision, it nevertheless relied on it. And we believe that the use of the common actor presumption is what gave the district court, after having found the establishment of a prima facie case in both claims, the belief or the support for finding as it did. And the common actor presumption, if we think about it, how can we continue to support a provision that supplies an ultimate fact that, yes, because you were hired 2 years ago by someone, as in this case, 2 years later, we can presume that those same people 2 years later would not discriminate against you. It is unreasonable. We believe that the trial court should be reversed.